What's up, dorks, and welcome to another episode of Music Dudes and Sci-Fi
Geeks.
We're recording right now live 2,800 space years upon Mega Alpha Infinity. I got with me Davey the Red Wizard, fresh out of his cryo sleep because we couldn't make it to the planet X-Million Alpha Tron.
So good.
And Kip here says it's from Woodland Lakes.
Woodland Lake. It's a Christian king.
Your microphone. Look at that.
Here's the deal. Tyler is right now making up this entire intro, and it's always stellar. Stellar.
So
you didn't prepare anything.
We're
for
on
this.
Stellar times, and I'm the pilot of this thing. Shout out to our fans: Jack Panther, Jacob, Lacey, Nathan, some of your friends,
Josh,
my mom, probably
another guy. There's another guy.
There's Jesse. There's Ralph.
Rich.
Maybe Terry Spence. Rich
is our number one. You know what? Here's the deal. I do this podcast just because Rich.
Because he says, when are you doing another podcast?
Yeah, and on top of that, like, I won't even remember that we did a podcast in my life. And then Rich will come up to me and be like, hey, I was listening to that one time, and you said this thing. It was really funny. And I'm like, dude, thank you.
It was good. So I'm going to recount a story real quick.
Okay.
You had a terrible week in your life. Terrible season. But you also didn't have a phone.
Oh, gosh.
And so I couldn't get a hold of you, but I knew you were in really...
This was like a month ago.
Really terrible times.
I had no phone, terrible times, wasn't available. Just
wasn't
off,
at your job.
No, just off the map. Great. I was in a closet somewhere.
So in order for me to feel close to you, I put on our podcast and I cleaned.
Yeah. Because that's what lovers do. I mean friends. Friends who love... That's just what...
So, I don't know about you, but I totes just want to talk about Ready Player One and Game of Thrones.
Oh, my goodness. I haven't watched any Game of Thrones, though.
Oh.
I still haven't finished the last season.
Here's the only thing I want to ask. Okay. You're familiar enough with it.
I know. I know right now. I know. Dude.
I'm familiar enough with it.
Yeah, okay.
I'm familiar enough.
So this isn't a spoiler. This isn't anything answered in the shows or the books. What do the White Walkers want?
I don't know.
Here's my take.
Okay.
Everyone keeps making them out to be a bigger deal than they are.
Okay.
I think that they're just kind of an exaggerated version of the Xenomorph. Here's another thing for those familiar with the show. The Children of the Forest made them. Okay. Because they were waging war with the first men who invaded
from
the east. Because they were burning down the forest and doing all this stuff. So the Children in the Forest inserted this obsidian blade into this guy's chest, and then his eyes go blue ice, and he's the first White Walker.
Okay.
There's a White Walker, which is a guy that looks like a soldier. He's in all the armor. He looks intelligent, you know. And then there's the Whites or the Others.
Yeah.
Those are the ones that look like decrepit skeletons.
Zombies.
Zombies.
Yeah,
sure.
They're effectively zombies.
Sure, but the White Walkers, that's like the commanding circle. Okay, the only thing that can kill them are an obsidian blade of Lyrian steel or dragon's fire, whatever. Everyone's all like, what do they want? Do they negotiate? Did they build the wall? Did they do this? I'm just like, no, I think they're here to kill mankind.
They're the onset. All right, they are. If anybody knows
just like
anything.
The Xenomorph, they were programmed to do something and it got out of hand and whoops, here we are. They don't speak. They don't negotiate.
Right. And on top of that, all right, so this is kind of like, I mean, I don't think that this is what George R. R. Martin is exactly getting at. He started writing this in the 90s. However.
Yeah. You could even argue before that.
Yeah, but since 9/11.
Sure.
I don't know if anybody knows this. I'm not into anime that much.
Okay.
But I do enjoy the ones that, the cream of the crop, stuff that rises to the top, right? Most of Japanese fictional sci-fi fantasy entertainment since the 2000s has been about the unbeatable, unstoppable, mindless destruction.
Sure.
It's this sense of, and I think this might speak true to a lot of millennials. It's the idea that there's no real purpose to life.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're just here to survive.
Yeah.
And there's things constantly, there's evil constantly trying to destroy our way of life.
Sure.
It's the personification of postmodernism.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Thank you, Davey, our producer.
It's the animation.
Davey the Red.
Man, this is like way earlier than Jacob would have talked.
Jacob didn't speak.
It's what it is. It's what it is, though. It's the...
Are you blowing into the...
That's good root beer.
It's really... It's not... It's mostly diet. Anyways...
What it is, it's the personification of postmodernism, and it... It speaks to a lot of the millennial generation because they experience that on a daily basis. They really do.
Exactly. And that's exactly my point. My point is very simply that if you watch anime
mindless
at all,
evil.
It's mindless,
sure.
Pointless destruction. Mm-hmm. It is a Walking Dead.
Sure.
Think of the shows that have become popular since 9/11. Seriously. No, use his. I have way too little. I will go through this.
So here's another question. What makes for better storytelling? Is it when the villain you can have empathy with, Darth Vader, for instance, because he's human, because he fell from grace, or is, you know, or like what Sauron used to be good.
No.
You know what I mean? Or is it just the mindless evil and there's no way to understand it because therefore there's no way to identify a weakness? And that's why I think the White Walkers are simple and they're just like, why do they keep coming south and why do they keep turning people into White Walkers? I'm just like, personally, I think they're just trying to build up their troops. Therefore, they can invade.
Yeah. Can I give two responses to that?
Let's hear it.
All right. First one is that no author of the 20th or 21st century has gotten evil, has done evil correctly more than Tolkien. So we have to like branch that out because there's so many philosophical things I want to get into here. Mm-hmm. I would like to say that when Sauron is a fallen angel, he is Lucifer, right? So sure. He is the brightest star fallen to the darkest place.
He's the echelon below the archangels.
Yeah, I know. But in that
way, he's an angel.
Yeah, exactly. The point is, he represents the strongest version, the strongest power of evil. And it is not mindless, except for this, that Tolkien's understanding of the world. I don't think Tolkien did any of this on purpose, by the way. I think that Tolkien was inspired.
Okay.
I think that outside of the scriptures, there's never been a more inspired work than Lord of the Rings.
You've mentioned this.
Yeah.
And Star Wars.
Yeah.
And Transformers.
No, not Star Wars. I actually hate the philosophy of Star Wars. I think it's stupid.
Okay.
I love the universe, but I think the philosophy is retarded. It's slow. It's bent. It's not.
What do you mean the philosophy?
By retarded, you mean just.
I mean retarded as in it's.
You mean
it's
just simple.
Yeah, it's very simple. It's cut short because the philosophy of Star Wars says you need evil for the light.
Oh, sure.
But we're going to battle evil. So what we're going to do is we're going to set up a universe in which you have to have the yin and the yang.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And yet the yang is wrong.
It's a
and so yin has to win.
Right.
It's a dichotomy.
Right. And so my point is I do not agree with the philosophy of the Star Wars universe because it says, well, you have to have the dark with the light mm-hmm. to create the whole,
the balance.
No. There's no balance. The whole point of the end of Return of the Jedi is there's no balance. Light wins. That's sure. what we want as humans. Mm-hmm. Tolkien clearly states that. Tolkien says there's no room for this evil in our universe. Sauron is someone who had purpose and meaning and had being.
Sure.
And then lost it to function.
Okay.
So Sauron himself falls as Saruman did. He's a human. He's not human. Well, the wizards are kind of like angels, actually, but kind of. The point is,
well, the wizards are the same thing. They were sent by the Maiar or whatever.
The Maiar, yeah,
yeah.
And so
disguised as old walking men to minister
to people and to guide them
to men, but they can't have any direct action.
Yeah,
they
and
can only
so
advise.
And so what happens is, you look at Sauron, and he used to be a being. He used to say, I am.
Mm-hmm.
And then he falls so far into darkness that he stops being something and he only becomes a function.
Sure.
It's like sin itself, mm-hmm. if you will. And that is that when someone falls so far from light that they have no being anymore, they don't have an identity. In fact, one of the best representations of this, sorry, I'm wandering all over, is the Mouth of Sauron. The Mouth of Sauron comes out to the Black Gate to meet Aragorn.
Mm-hmm.
And what does it say in the books? Not in the movie. Oh, in the books, it says something along the lines of, He had no name, for he himself had forgotten it long ago.
Oh, wow.
That's what it says in Tolkien. Hmm. That's what he wrote. The mouth of Sauron ceases to be a being and only becomes a function. A function of evil.
And that's why the White Walkers.
And so to me, the White Walkers are actually a good explanation of evil. I think that evil is only a function.
Okay.
Evil ceases to have mind and purpose.
Sure.
It's not like we're fighting humans. We're fighting evil that only so all seeks of this, to destroy.
What do the White Walkers want? It's just like, well, nothing.
Who
just
cares?
They've been programmed.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
They don't have soul.
Right.
They don't have spirit. Mm-hmm. They don't have purpose or function. Not function. They don't have purpose or meaning. Mm-hmm. They exist only to destroy what is good.
Sure.
So and that is a good evil. I like that. I didn't used to like that when I was young. Used to actually like the Darth Vader, is there something redeemable? And well, I think that's because we want to relate to being lost and then found again.
Sure.
We want to relate to being completely screwed up and then made whole again.
Right.
We want to believe that we can be Darth Vader and then come back from that. However, when it comes to evil, when it comes to really pure evil within a plot, mm-hmm. especially within something like A Song of Fire and Ice,
mm-hmm.
there's this idea that there is an evil that has no purpose other than to destroy what is good.
Right, right. So a quick cliff note version of is regarding the White Walkers. Like I said, back in the ancient days, the children of the forest made the White Walkers to destroy the first men. But it's one of those things, they haven't been back in the thousands and thousands of years. And they're just like, it's been thousands. Why are they back? And to me, the White Walkers were vanquished. So they went back to reproduce, and only to come back with greater numbers. But we erected a wall to keep them out. That doesn't do a thing, because I'm sure the White Walkers also are magic. They were created in magic, so they also have some sort of power in itself.
Right.
You know, and it's just funny seeing YouTube people just trying to figure them out. There's nothing to figure out.
There's no political strategy.
No.
Here.
No.
Uh-huh. Just like with just like with ISIS,
yeah.
There's no real.
Oh my God.
Sorry, no, I'm sorry, but let's talk about this for a second. This has real. When we talk about fiction and we tell stories, it's because we want to make sense of our own world.
I understand.
ISIS.
Also, we want to distract.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'm sorry. However, and this is coming from somebody who wants to distract. However, I will say this: when you look at a group of people like ISIS,
mm-hmm.
they believe that they have a goal and an agenda in mind. They don't. They don't really. They don't know what's on the other side of destruction. They don't really know what that looks like. They don't know what government looks like. They don't know what stasis looks like. They don't know what living in peace looks like. They come to destroy because they are angry. And they are the face of malevolent anger. Like, that's literally why they exist.
But they're fulfilling it out of works. They think they're right.
I agree with that. However, if you look at what those groups of people tend to do,
mm-hmm.
they don't care about the goodness that can come after.
Mm-hmm.
They only care about the destruction that comes first. They're there only to destroy because they join because they're angry. They join because they're hurt. They join because they have no purpose or meaning, and then they sell themselves over to a function, which is destruction, period. My point is, in a post 9/11 world,
mm-hmm.
there are evils in this world that exist only to destroy.
Okay.
Where has ISIS landed? Sorry, I'm getting real serious. I don't mean to.
I know.
Where has ISIS landed where a positive group of people or government has been set up? It's never happened.
No.
So my point is, people are writing now, though, based on this post 9/11 world where there is evil that has no purpose.
Mm-hmm.
It is the Walking Dead. It is the White Walkers. It is the
aliens.
Yeah, it is the xenomorph.
Yeah,
it is the mindless destruction of what is good.
Davey has something to say.
Davey, our producer,
interrupting again.
Evil has never had a purpose. It's never been grounded in anything ethical. It's always been the opposite of good, of righteousness. It's always been the opposite. So it's not grounded in anything. Its sole purpose is to disrupt something good, something stable, something founded.
But isn't that purpose?
No. I think it actually in a, if we're talking about vocabulary and language, I think it's actually the opposite of purpose.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
It's the deterioration of purpose. It's the destruction or
it's entropy only
the breaking down of purpose. And I think that would be even in the sense of morality, I think it would be the opposite because morality is the, our pursuit of something important or something good and breaking down is
entropy. And so, it's good. I'm being serious. I really enjoy what you're saying. What I'm trying to get at is I agree with you. There is mindless evil. There is mindless evil.
Yeah.
And then there is the human story. Sure. Which is the, are we Darth Vader or not?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody is associating themselves with the White Walkers.
Mm-mm.
But we are associating ourselves with Darth Vader.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
How? Can you elaborate?
Yeah, of course.
I'd like to hear that.
Of course I can. Darth Vader, as we know from episode 4, as described by Obi-Wan Kenobi himself.
Yeah.
Well,
Vader was seduced by the dark side of the Force. Your father wanted you to have this when you were old enough.
Yeah. He's a beetle now?
Dude, that's I have that joke with my brother. This is my impression of John Lennon auditioning for Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Vader was seduced.
So that's I just let you guys in on that.
I love that.
I think I've also done that joke for my brother probably like 5 or 6 times. And every time he goes, and so I just, for some reason, I just keep trying it out on him. Like, maybe he'll fly.
Vader was seduced by the Force.
You don't see.
You nailed it.
He let me yeah.
Hey, lads, look at what comes our way.
Anyway. What was I elaborating on? I was elaborating on the fact that...
We should be more funny.
Vader.
God, we're getting really serious, aren't we?
All of a sudden.
Lord in heaven, help us.
We want to talk about days?
Why did we stop getting funny? When did that happen?
You went into a big... As soon as you said living in a post 9/11 world, I'm like, yes.
Oh no.
Gosh,
here comes Kip.
Here we go.
Yeah, oh no.
Serious.
Here's the deal. Here's the deal.
So here's the deal.
I don't make this podcast to make people laugh.
I do.
You're right, I do too. My point is, let's get back to some funny stuff. Because here's the deal.
I'm going to
say it 4 more times. Don't check Facebook.
Check Facebook.
We enjoy the podcast.
Yeah.
But we read, I'm pointing at a bookshelf that people can't see. I just realized that I'm doing things with my arms. Nobody can see me. I'm looking over at all these books. And we're looking at them.
Which one?
And then
I
see the best of CSS. Wait.
You want to know when our first podcast was?
When was that?
August 4th, 2016.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. In 2 years.
In a year.
Or 1 year, I mean.
In a year, we've done 10. We've averaged less than one a month.
We're the worst podcasters in history. The point is, we get together because we talk about these stories. It's called Music Dudes and Sci-Fi Geeks.
Sweet.
Now, we're going to get to some music here in a second. I'm going to bring something up here. I'm going to bring something fresh.
Let's hear it.
Harmar Superstar, we're going to talk about it in a second. Now, but before that, we talk about sci-fi and we talk about fantasy because it's struggle. It's jihad. Jihad literally just means struggle. That's all the word means. Jihad means struggle. It's struggle with truth, with God, with what is right, what is wrong. We read all of these books because they say something about who we are.
Mm-hmm.
And we struggle with evil, and we struggle with goodness, mm-hmm. and we fight these battles every day, and we want more than what our life is without having to go to World War II.
That's true.
And die. And so, if we get a little serious, everybody, I'm sorry.
Promise we won't do it again.
Never. It'll never happen. I will never mention 9/11 again. On the podcast, unless we're talking about a like post 9/11 fictional dystopian future.
Is there anything else you wanted to bring up?
I know I'm a producer.
Producers talk way less than this.
Okay.
Davey Wood. Jihad means struggle. That's the word.
Jihad means struggle against fallacy, is what it means.
Okay.
That's fine. It's still
struggle against okay, something.
While the two of those guys bicker, I'm going to talk about a book that's called Ready Player One.
No,
Ready
Player wait, we're going to talk about music
that,
first.
It takes care of the future, and it's about this guy. His name is Wade, and he has this avatar that's called Parsifal. And so Parsifal goes into this thing, and it's called a haptic suit. And so he gets on his glasses, and he goes into this thing that's called the Oasis.
Can I ask a question? Can I ask a question, Tyler? How excited are you?
Alternate reality, where you can be anything you want. You can be Darth Vader. You can be Deadpool. And you just go, and you can you go to school, and then, but there's this thing that's called...
Need the second one.
Okay.
My point is this. How... No, quietly.
To get... And what the Easter egg is when you get the Easter egg, then you get the control of the whole Oasis. And the thing about the Oasis is that it just it's the center of everything.
How excited are you about the movie directed?
Directed.
By Steven Spielberg.
Yeah.
And the man himself.
Scored by Alan Silvestri. Is that
Alan Silvestri is the correct name.
Yeah. And he's done like Avengers.
Yes.
Okay.
He's amazing.
Yeah, he's awesome.
And I love this book because mm-hmm. it's one of those books that kind of transcends the genre a little bit in that mm-hmm. it's more accessible to people because it is based in cultural, what's the word for that? Nostalgia?
You sure? Pop culture nostalgia?
Yeah.
It's all...
Have you read Ready Player One yet? Our producer, Davey, he shook his head. He kept his mouth closed. That was really good. He's flipping me off. He did a good job.
Real quick, what made me... Sure. The intrigue about this book is looking at one of my nerd sites. It said, hey, Steven Spielberg picked up the rights to Ready Player One.
Yeah, you texted me that 2 years ago, and I was like, oh.
But no, I didn't even know what Ready Player was when I read that heading.
Oh.
And I was like, well, whatever Steven Spielberg does usually turns out pretty great.
Right.
So I'm like, what is this? Next thing, I'm actually in a bookshop, and I'm like, oh, here's that book, Ready Player One. And I look at the cover, and it says, The Matrix meets Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Hmm. And I said, what?
What?
How do you get two films that are more, one's a kid's comedy, the other one, you know? I'm just I don't understand.
I usually don't know anything about sci-fi and fantasy pop culture right now, mm-hmm. outside of Tyler texting me things. And so I have to hear about them way later. Because I used to be a purveyor, a consumer, or whatever you will. I would be on the front lines of this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And then now it's like I'll just be like working, and I'll get a phone call, and five texts.
No, five texts come first.
For first, and then the phone call.
Dude, did you get my text?
Did you get the text? Hey, did you read this text? I'm like, I'm at work. I can't talk right now. All right, just real quick, Did you hear? And so. Tyler he out nerds me, and I wish he couldn't, but he does. I want to be that big of a nerd, that big of a geek.
There's just two websites that I visit, dude. That's
I know, but the problem is you do it religiously.
Probably
5 to 7 times a day.
Oh my God, it's 5 to 7 times an hour.
No.
It's always up. He refreshes it. The point is, mm-hmm. I appreciate the fact that I wouldn't know anything. I would not be a sci-fi geek. If it weren't for Tyler bugging the hell out of me about stuff to talk about.
Right.
And I remember when you turned me on to this book, and then, you had talked about it. I hadn't read it yet, and you were like, dude, Steven Spielberg picked up the rights to Ready Player One. I was like, what? Why? And then I read it, and I realized it's one of those stories.
It's only he could do.
Yeah, I mean, it's easily relatable. It's like AI done well. Mm-hmm. It's like a better story version of the movie AI, where it's like kind of futuristic, a little dystopian, whatever.
So here's a brief premise.
Right.
Set in the future.
Yep.
Not post-apocalyptic, but just future dystopia. Everyone's poor.
Yeah.
Overpopulation.
And he's in Columbus, Ohio, which I love.
Yeah. And so he lives in something called the Stacks, and that's a bunch of Winnebagos and trailers stacked on top of each other. So that and
50 levels high.
Yeah, so it's called the Stacks. But everyone has a smartphone. Okay, everyone actually has these Oculus glasses, and they can tap into something that's called the Oasis.
Yeah,
and the Oasis is this alternate reality where everyone,
everyone
does everything. It's everyone goes to school in the Oasis. Yeah. Everyone goes and sees movies, enjoys music.
You don't go anywhere in the real world. to enjoy things anymore.
Sure.
Just like we barely do anything in the real world to enjoy our media now.
Right.
We get most of our movies, we get most of our TV, we get most of our books via the internet.
Sure.
And that's what this is, except it's
totally immersive.
Yeah, exactly.
Totally
immersive. Thank you.
Unlimited and so, access then?
What?
Kind of thing? It's unlimited access.
Sort of, except for the fact.
But it costs money.
Yes.
Okay. It costs money. So here's the thing. The Oasis is essentially a universe that you can travel in.
Okay.
It's created by this guy. So pretend that there's this like Steve Jobs.
I was about to say, it's like Steve Jobs on crack.
But it's like, but elements Steve of Facebook Jobs. And, you know, elements of Apple and, you know, all this stuff.
It's almost as if the same person had created the internet and Facebook and iTunes Apple. And Apple and computers all at once.
Yeah.
Kind of.
And PlayStation.
Yeah. I mean, like, imagine that everything that you interact with, one person created the best version of that all at once.
Sure.
And people dive into that.
Right. So you go in and just like a very science fictional universe, you know, everyone is on this planet, but it costs a lot of money to take a starship and go to a planet. In the universe and teleportation.
Within the virtual universe.
Teleportation, right. It means you have to be this many levels up in your avatar. So it's also got this game sense to it. And so this guy that's created the whole thing doesn't have a wife, doesn't have kids. He goes, hey, upon my death, release this to the world. And he says, if you find my Easter egg, you inherit the Oasis and all of its money, which is like $80 trillion or something like that.
It's the most imaginable. Right. The richest person alive ever imaginable
is
giving away his fortune.
The fun thing about this, the guy that created it is a huge, huge fan and grew up in the 80s. Super big fan of 80s pop culture. So in order to understand where this Easter egg is, you have to understand everything about the 80s. Family ties. You know, a Rush,
E.T.,
all of these Steven Spielberg
properties. Dude, actually, it's funny.
Are in Ready Player One, and Steven Spielberg is directing the movie. So this trailer releases, okay? And so there's this, like, what looks like this demolition derby race. And in it, I think you see the Akira motorcycle.
And Tron.
You see a Tron bike. Light bike. Yep. And then you see the DeLorean.
Oh, yeah.
You see a DeLorean. Yep. You see the Iron Giant. You see... God, there's other. You see, like a Deadpool. You see Harley Quinn. Yeah, at the dance.
Really?
Yeah,
I missed that.
Yeah. And it's you can make your avatar to be whoever you want. No one knows who you are. So it's
Mad Max in it or.
What? No. It's just everything that's 80s pop culture and maybe a little bit 90s and 70s. Okay. You know,
it goes both ways. A lot of arcade stuff. Mostly, it's mostly centered around video games, arcade video games.
I know, very a lot specifically. Of
sci-fi. No, I know, I agree.
Sure.
But I mean, how many things does a dude have to do where it's based on how good were you at this one video game?
At Mrs. Pac-Man.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so you have to know. Do they go into Dragon's Lair? I don't know if they go into that.
I don't know.
Anyways, the point is, it's very much about being a young teenager in the 80s and finding yourself. And so they reference all of that.
Yeah.
And if you grew up at all in that, this book is like
heroin.
Oh, I know that. Yeah. And so it's very accessible to anybody who's 30 or older.
Sure.
Without being a sci-fi book. I did air quotes, everybody. Without being a sci-fi. It's definitely a sci-fi. Air quotes, sci-fi book. The point is, it's very much a sci-fi book. It's very much a set in the future. However, if you're 30 or above, and you know anything about the 80s, you're going to some of them. You're going to be like, wait, I have to look this up
because sure.
there was like one or two things. I hate Rush.
I know you do.
I hate him.
But when he was talking about the 2112 thing, I was like, oh,
fly by night.
I know.
Away from here. Anyway. God. I hate Rush more than anything else alive. However, I knew what he was talking about. But my point is, there were a couple references. Oh, and in fact, on the first, I texted Tyler about this. So Tyler has me read the book. Mm-hmm. And he's like, dude, like, if you grew up in the 80s, you're going to love this book. It's got so many references. First page, which I don't know if you knew it when I texted you, but on the first or second page, there's a quote and it says, cats and dogs living together, blah, blah, blah. Well, that is a quote by Bill Murray from Ghostbusters.
Oh,
and
sure.
as soon as I read it, I was like, yeah, I know that line. Mm-hmm. Like, I knew that line. He didn't explain it, the author. He just says, and it's like this, quote, cats and dogs living together, absolute mayhem.
Did you know that Will Wheaton does the audiobook? He's the voice of the audiobook.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's just, I feel like this movie is, it's very, very meta. Will Wheaton is also referred to in the book.
Yeah.
Spielberg is referred to in the book.
Yeah, a lot. And he was directing it. Like, Spielberg is like the silent voice in the book itself.
Yeah.
I mean, Spielberg, he directed most of the movies that were formative for me.
Sure. And Back to the Future, around, yeah. Indiana Jones, E.T.
He didn't do Back to the Future.
Sorry, produced.
Sorry, he produced.
Executive produced.
Yeah. But
I always give Spielberg credit for that movie.
No, absolutely. I mean, Spielberg did everything, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway. It was amazing. So, long and the short of it is Ready to Player One.
And also, in that trailer, when you see everyone starting to gear up for what looks like a race, they play Tom Sawyer.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I know you don't like that song.
I know.
But as soon as I was just like, oh, that was so appropriate.
Yeah. And my favorite scene, though, is when the Iron Giant walks up and then they had that scene where, like, all of these characters, like Freddy Krueger, is jumping out of a pile of people and getting destroyed by somebody else. It's like, yeah, it's an explosion of the 80s.
And it comes out in a year, I think, or March or something.
Yeah.
And I think even Spielberg moved it away from Episode 8 so he wouldn't be competing at the box office. I was like, what?
Yeah.
So just the Disney Star Wars juggernaut, I'm just like, really?
Yeah.
Anyway.
And we never talked about Rogue One. Not really.
No.
We never did. It's okay.
The thing about Rogue One from the beginning is that it felt like the best fan film of Star Wars I've ever seen. Just pull his leg hair.
No, it's like somebody. It seriously. Rogue
from
One.
From the beginning, from the music that came in. I was just like, ew.
Was there a screen crawl?
No.
Nope.
And yeah, when the music came in, I was like, this doesn't feel right.
It's not exactly Star Wars. Were there any screen wipes between? There weren't.
And there was also like 8 locations in the first 30 minutes.
And when we say screen wipes, by the way, when you
transitions.
Watch. Yeah. But it, people don't really pay attention to that stuff.
Between locations.
And so when you're like changing a scene, you'll see from left to right. Just like
Or the hourglass or from the middle. But it's usually either when a lot of time elapses or when we totally change locations.
Yeah. The Force Awakens uses it a bunch.
Yeah. It's great.
A bunch. And it's great. It's a good homage.
Saga films will. But the standalones won't.
No, I'm being sick. I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
So anyways, Rogue One to me, I was just like, that was a fun film. A lot of the footage from the trailer didn't make it into the cut.
No.
But apparently trailer companies aren't really a part of the studio.
Nope.
So they just see a bunch of the footage lying around and they go, oh, that's cool.
Yep.
Yeah, there's like a TIE fighter that comes up and you see what's her name with the thing. This was before because when whatever his name is, he's just like, oh, yeah, then the rebels, they all get off and then they get away. And Disney was all like, well, you can't do that. You got to, because then we'll want to know where they are. They should probably all die. And he's like, oh, Gareth Edwards is his name. He's like, oh, serious?
The director.
Sweet. That was my original intention anyway. And he had already shot a lot of, here's how they get away, guys. And then they all die. I'm like, great. That was great.
It was really amazing.
I felt like it was a little bit of fan service, however, when Vader went ape.
Listen, I'm sorry.
It was great.
Can I share a story? Let me share one story. I'm going to share one story. I watched Rogue One after it came out on Netflix, by the way, about a month ago.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe 2 months ago.
Yeah.
A month and a half ago. Mm-hmm. I've seen it 3 times now. Every single time. The Vader sequence
you'd get chills.
Happens. No, I rewind it and watch it 3 or 4 times. It is the absolute epitome. It is the culmination of everything that you've wanted to see.
Yeah.
We
haven't seen it yet. But
it's not the prequel bullshit.
No, no.
Sorry. That's my one shit for the podcast. Okay. Sorry.
Here's the thing. The saga versions of Vader, he does all of his sparring with one hand.
Yep.
Luke uses 2.
Yep.
Okay, so it's slow, it's calculated, and Lucas justifies it. He's like, oh, yeah, well, in A New Hope, it was a very old man and then a very mechanical Vader. They lost their touch. And I'm like, boo.
Boo.
Yeah,
exactly.
So then in Empire Strikes Back, he's like, well, Luke is giving it his all, but Vader knows he's his son, so he's holding back.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay. And then in the third one, he's like, oh, they're actual rivals now. They're actually both, but there's the tension. And then you have the prequels, which is very, it's like a dance.
It's like a ninja.
And it's actually a little bit too much.
Not a little bit too much. Okay. It's way too much. Well, like, I hated the prequels because of that.
Okay.
They were like, so all of these Jedi have existed for these thousands of years. Mm-hmm. We've seen the main story, and now they can like jump 10 flips 150 feet down a wall, destroy an entire army. No. And so...
Well, the thing is, let me... Real quick. That was the only reason that I actually liked the prequels.
I know. I wanted that, too.
Well, this...
But it's not canonical.
I know, but the saber battles, to me, were so amazing.
I know they were.
But then, now that they've been out for plus 10 years, I watched some of the battles again. I'm just like, this is too much, and I actually don't like it.
It's way too much. And it's like magic. It's like literally... It's a teenager's version of Star Wars,
sure,
right?
I understand.
And so...
Okay, so what I was
going
to say.
You're watching Rogue One.
Okay, so now they're like, okay, well, if that's Anakin in the suit, and Anakin could do that, so then all these fans start making up with their hands, they're like, in their heads, excuse me, like, Vader should be able to
mm-hmm.
fill in the blank. So finally we see it in Rogue One. And he should be able to do the flips and the trills. And my favorite part, though, is when he brings that one
guy up to the wall, up to the ceiling,
with his fist.
I've watched that scene way too many times.
I know.
Way more times than an adult man should have.
Yeah. No
and way. I have.
But that is the best part when he's coming at him with his fist.
It's all dark and they go, we need help. We need help. And they turn around, silence,
breathing,
smoke.
Yeah, you hear the breathing. Yeah,
and then. And then the red lightsaber comes out.
Sure.
When he does that.
I wonder where all the smoke came from.
You get chills, first of all.
It's good.
Secondly, he stalks through the hallway. Mm-hmm. And for the first time since the prequel madness, because the prequels were terrible.
That's true.
The prequels were stupid and they were awful. And there's all these flips and shit. If you're a Jedi, mm-hmm. you don't flip around. You walk through people. No, seriously. There's the March of Vader in that movie.
Yeah.
He marches slowly. He doesn't care.
Sure.
And he has one. He's one-handing this slowly. Broom, broom, with one hand. Mm-hmm. The other hand just grabbing people. Mm-hmm. Throw him. He's stiff. He's not even moving around. He's just walking forward.
Sure.
Calmly grabbing people. Throwing them to the ceiling.
Sure.
While they're up on the ceiling,
then
he grabs all of the guns.
Them. Yeah.
All of the guns.
Right.
Whereas right before that, he had deflected all of the laser. He had held some laser beams and thrown them back.
That was. Oh. So let me break down all of the force ability that he exercises at once. Brings a guy to the ceiling.
Yep. So there's.
Then he does this with his hand.
He puts his hand out in
catches
the big five.
Catches a laser. Makes a fist.
Holds it.
Brings all the guns.
All of the guns.
And then turns it around and releases it.
So I'm just while the dude's still on the ceiling.
And then he cuts him with his lightsaber.
Yes.
So that's like three at once.
And then keeps going.
And then keeps going. Unscathed.
And that's what I love about that Vader is mm-hmm. He's not flipping around like the...
I know.
When I saw Yoda in the prequels...
I thought that
doing
was...
it's very cool when you're 13.
Like, I know, and I was 15, and I was like, oh, cool.
Yeah, Yoda's jumping around. Right. He's not old. No. I want to see a Yoda with a cane, mm-hmm. because that's only like 15 years later.
Just doing insane Jedi
I want to see
tricks.
Yoda with a cane, who's going, I'm doing the whole, like, and he's destroying people. And that is Gareth Edwards literally knows the genre. He knows the movies. And he said, we're going to make a Vader that works.
Yeah. So here's another
thing. Not with the prequels.
Right.
But with the real movies.
So here's another thing about Rogue One that a lot of people were just like, oh my gosh, Vader's had a dad joke. So when he is meeting on that.
My face is perplexed right now. Okay. I'm going, what?
They actually don't show a location title for this planet, but it's Mustafar. It's a volcano.
Right.
Okay, if you look at any of these, like, silly technical journals, the Emperor told Vader to make a temple. That's where he goes and rejuvenates, and he gets inspired by his own hate, because that's when he was deformed.
Right.
On Mustafar from episode 3. I'm like, cool. Cool little lore building right there. When he takes his whole Bacta baths... it's very actually painful. They actually end up having to strip a lot of scar tissue away and reapply stuff.
Right.
So it's very painful for him. And I'm like, ugh, yeah. So he gets into his new suit. Also, all of his gear, they say they calculate weighs like 60 to 80 pounds.
Right.
So wherever he goes, it's an effort and it hurts. So Vader is always in pain at all times. Yeah. And I'm just like, okay, cool. Yeah. Hate and pain and evil.
Right.
Get it. So when, when he's talking to that one commander, he's like, the Death Star, and this is the Death Star, and Tarkin is taking the Death Star from me. What are you going to do, Vader? And I need an audience with the Emperor.
Are you going to talk to the Emperor about this?
Yeah, yeah. Can you talk to him for me or whatever? And so then...
He says, don't choke on your own ambition.
Don't choke on your own ambition.
Yeah.
And he turns around and they're like, oh, total dad joke, Vader. I'm like, whoa,
no. Wait.
That was dark and sarcastic. That's not a dad joke or a pun. I'm like... And again, in my head, I'm just like, I can... Like in Empire Strikes Back, when he's talking to Lando Calrissian, and he says, when he's like, you told me the Wookiee and the princess would be kept here under my supervision. And Vader goes, you feel like you're being treated unfairly?
Yeah. Yeah. It's all threatening. Yeah. He's like, are you kidding me?
And Lando goes,
are you effing kidding me?
Yeah. And Lando goes, no.
No.
And he goes, okay, good. It's fortunate I don't have to like put a garrison here. Yeah, and then he marches off
and just march.
And I'm just like, no, that's Vader. That's not.
No, absolutely.
And same thing in the regular Star Wars where he chokes that guy. Goes, I find your lack of faith disturbing.
Disturbing.
That's so dark and sarcastic. That's not a dad joke.
No,
that's not a pun. That's just Vader.
Don't choke on your own ambitions. He literally choked a dude out. Yeah. He made the creation of the joke, if you will. Sure. So it's not like a dad joke where somebody was choking and he was like, don't choke on your own. No, he literally choked the guy out and he's like, do not. Yeah. Don't do this.
All that to say, that got kind of headlines and acknowledgments on just regular media. Vader's poor dad joke. I'm like, that's actually the character. I'm
he
sorry.
He does
you
that over and over again.
I'm sorry that you guys all watch this movie when you're five and you actually don't identify the sarcasm.
Yes. No, but I'm serious. That scene with him walking when everything turns dark.
Mm-hmm. It's awesome. Also,
the red lightsaber comes out.
Yeah.
He marches through them as if the entire brigade of people shooting at him are nothing.
Sure.
There's no flips.
There's no flips.
There's no kicks.
There's no kicks.
There's no jumping around.
And silly tricks.
And no silly tricks. He destroys an entire brigade of rebellion forces
by
marching slowly forward.
Okay.
It is the powerful evil. It's the Nazis slowly moving through Europe.
Here's my only critique of it. Like, those guys in Rogue One had, like, real fear on their face and in their eyes. And I'm just like, geez, like even my fist was clenched. I'm like, get out of there.
I love it.
So anyways, they finally
For the first time in Star Wars history, by the way.
Yeah.
For the first time.
I will say that. And then you watch A New Hope and they're all, and I'm just like, do these guys even know the evil that's approaching them?
No.
Yeah, and so they're just kind of inquisitive.
Yeah. Is there somebody coming up?
And then the stormtroopers do the best job ever and they just mow down all the guys, and then Vader steps in. I'm like, holy crap. So all that to say, also nice little thing. That was actually Gareth Edwards' hand that goes up and releases the shuttle
from
the bigger ship. Yeah, that was him.
Really?
That does that. And that then on top of that, Gareth Edwards stole the prop of the Death Star plans from Rogue One.
So
I stole the Death Star plans. Death Star.
So
anyways, little cute things. So all that to say,
I love it though when people who respect mm-hmm. story, respect film, make films. That's all there is to
it. I'll say this. So one last thing, 3PO and R2-D2 are at the Rebel base. Okay, and they're like, oh my goodness, what's going on? Then in New Hope, they end up on the ship. I wish they didn't show the cameo there on the base.
I know.
I wish the cameo was in Leia's ship and just the guy with the plans just runs past him and then 3PO's just like, my goodness, and that was it. You know, that he just like tears past him in the hallway. And that's all you see of 3PO and R2. And therefore, when A New Hope starts, they're still in the same hallway. Did you hear that? They start down the main reactor.
Yeah.
More subtle.
Yeah. More subtle. Not even from the front, just the side. Like, my goodness. You know what I mean?
Let's talk for one moment about the fact that we have watched 7 Star Wars films before this.
No.
8. 7. 8. No, wait. 8. Wait. 7 Star Wars films before this.
Oh, before Rogue One.
Before Rogue One.
I see what you mean.
We've watched 7 Star Wars films before this.
Yeah.
We've seen some people die.
Yeah.
We've seen some people die who We knew it was coming, or yeah, it was needed, or whatever. Mm-hmm. And yet, Rogue One is literally the Saving Private Ryan mm-hmm. of the Star Wars universe.
Sure.
These people, you know for a fact they're going to their doom.
Right.
And because of that, mm-hmm. even though, God, Episode 7 is probably one of my favorite movies of all time. Really? Like, I could watch that over and over and over and over again.
I think 8 is, oh, man. I think Episode 7 is good, but I think, no, Episode, I'm not talking about Return of the Jedi, I'm talking about The Force Awakens. I think when we see what's coming, this is the first saga film that you're going to see that's like, oh my gosh.
No, I agree. I mean, I think that 7 is one of my favorite films.
Yeah.
Like, I think 7 is better than Empire Strikes Back. I'm sorry.
Oh, for real?
I'm sorry. I hate that. I hate that I think that, but I do. I like it more. Mm-hmm. My point is, I love 7. I love 7.
It's good.
I love 7. But when I watched Rogue One, mm-hmm. and everyone knows what they're getting into.
Sure.
And you watch people march into their own deaths. Mm-hmm. And you know that they're going to die.
Yep.
Like.
It's good.
There was something visceral there that's been lacking from every Star Wars movie ever. Mm-hmm. And that is that Rogue One was Saving Private Ryan meets yeah. Star Wars.
Yep. Sure.
And you know that people are going to die. You know that they're going to sacrifice. Mm-hmm. You know that something visceral and real and human is going to happen. It's not the, we're going to shoot a torpedo down a hole and then get medals at the end of the movie. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not that. It's yeah. not like something far off.
So now that we're on a Star Wars tangent, the Han Solo film yeah. is now directed by Ron Howard.
Yes.
Because the original guys that were doing it are two, like, directing partners. You told
me about this. Yeah. I only know about this because of Tyler.
Yeah, but that did 21 and 22 Jump Street.
Yeah.
And reports got back. I don't know who ratted them out or if Lucasfilm, the mothership, and Disney were watching the dailies, but they're just like, this is not a slapstick comedy. This is Star Wars. Because the actors were being told, like, hey, improvise that. Let it hang. Be a little loose. And so Kathleen Kennedy's just like, nope. Sorry. And they got Ron Howard. Who did Willow.
Wait.
Who did Apollo 13. Wait.
Who did Arrested Development.
Who did... Okay. But, like...
No, I know.
But keep it dry.
No, I know. It's all dry. It is. And that's Ewan McGregor, and that's Obi-Wan, too, by the way. Mm-hmm. So I'm really happy about that.
Sure.
Although, I would say...
What do you mean by Ewan McGregor? What do you mean? What now?
Ewan McGregor with the Obi-Wan movies.
What are we talking about? We're talking about Han Solo.
Oh, I know, but the... Oh, sorry. I totally tangented for no reason.
Sure.
Forget. Strike it from the record.
Okay.
Go back. My point is this.
Yeah.
Ron Howard is one of those guys who lives in the world of, like, serious, but, like,
sure.
There's dry humor here.
Yeah.
And the guys
also did Da Vinci Code and Angels and Demons. He also directed those. Did you not like those? I appreciated them.
Not at all.
Not at all?
Okay. No, not even a little bit.
Okay. I read the book, and then I saw the movie, and I went, okay. Like, I didn't have anything invested in it, but
right.
based on the book, I was not let down from how the story read. Mm. Yeah, to me. Anyways, all that I'm saying, I love how Ron Howard grew up admiring Star Wars.
Right.
And he's
right.
like, what was that? And right. the other two juggernauts that are just kind of like, almost in the realm of you can't touch them, is Ridley Scott and James Cameron.
Right.
Honorable mentions would be Steven Spielberg. I don't know if he's ever going to direct a Star Wars film. And then now Peter Jackson. Yeah. You know what I mean? And
Christopher Nolan.
I don't think he will ever get a Star Wars film.
I hope
but
he does.
If he does, it's going to be the best film it in will be, existence.
It will be. Listen, God, if Christopher Nolan gets...
And Hans Zimmer. And, it has to be those two. And if it's not, I'm not going to go.
No, I won't even go. And on top of that, it'll be at the end of the movie, everyone will walk out going... That was the greatest Star Wars film I've ever seen, but I'm mad about something. Was the top spinning or falling over? Did they find their people?
But it's,
are the rebels winning?
But it's going to be starring Michael Caine, and it's going to have Tom Hardy, and it's going to have Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and Leonardo DiCaprio, and Christian Bale.
Oh, my God.
Because he uses the same people.
All right, 5... 30
and Cillian Murphy.
Oh, God, he's the best. So, Cillian Murphy, if you have not seen Peaky Blinders...
Mm-hmm. I have not.
Oh, are you serious? Okay.
Serious as a heart attack.
You already said it. I don't know why I questioned your saying, I've not seen that. Like, are you serious? You've not seen it?
No, I've seen
like,
it.
You're like, no. Oh, really?
No.
Good. Anyways, my point is.
What's your point?
Watch Netflix.
Okay.
Watch Peaky Blinders.
I'm reading it. I can't be watching stuff. I can't be watching shows and listening to podcasts.
You watch shows and listen to podcasts all the time and then read books too.
I know.
We find space for things we love. And okay, so here's the deal. Peaky Blinders.
Yeah, it's good.
Have you seen that at all?
Nope.
Wait, producer. Hey, I'm going to ask the producer a question.
All right.
And it's a one-word answer. So you don't talk too
much. Normally on podcasts, they only nod yes or no.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'm going to allow him one word. Hey, have you seen the Peaky Blinders?
No.
He nodded instead of talking. He's ruining everything we've created.
All right.
Anyways, if you want to know what Cillian Murphy is as a person.
Yar.
An actor. He was in 28 Days Later.
Oh, yeah, we know that.
He was the Scarecrow in the Batman movies, and he's a phenomenal actor.
Yep, that's right.
And Peaky Blinders is
Dunkirk. Did you see Dunkirk?
No, I have not.
Oh, yeah.
Not seen Dunkirk yet because
seen Dunkirk.
No, I have a friend. Have you seen Dunkirk?
Yes.
Producer Davey Wood, tell me, have you seen Dunkirk? Tell me what you think about it.
Yeah.
And
so something really awesome about Dunkirk.
Wait,
can I tell you about it?
No, you shut the fart up. Shut the. I'm saving it. You shut your shit mouth. Okay, here, Davey, can you tell me one good thing about Dunkirk?
Oh, you mean where there's some genuine.
They incorporate something called the Shepherd's Tone in the score.
Shut up.
This is something that Hans Zimmer does.
Oh, wait. All right. So you actually talked about this. I'm sorry. So this is actually where, like, truth, fiction, and music overlaps. Wait.
Yeah.
No, seriously.
The Shepherd's Tone.
I knew about this, but I hadn't heard it in a movie. So what's Shepherd's Tone there,
so
Tyler?
So it's where you have a tone that starts in the and low frequencies. So so picture a piano and starts on the lowest key, and then it starts to only get higher. You just disconnected your mic.
No, it's totally fine.
It's like the TGX, THX sound check.
Sure, and it gets higher and higher and higher. And by the time it gets up to 2 octaves higher, then you have another low tone that starts at the beginning.
Yes.
So you keep having this graduation of tones that just keep getting higher and keep getting higher.
Sorry,
and keep
producer getting... Davey, you don't need to talk anymore. you just ruined it.
I don't know what I'm supposed to do.
You sit there. You're going to drive me home.
I just drive you home. And
that's it. That's you drive. You set things. No,
asked
you
you what I'm supposed to do.
And I told you.
I'm supposed to drive you home.
You drive me here. You drive me home.
Stop.
You sit there and we make fun of you.
Anyway, so there's two different Shepherd's Tone. One is rhythmic where it sounds just like this big machine. And it just keeps going.
Is it like unsettling though?
Yes. And then second one is actually a symphony.
While they're fighting and stuff?
Escaping from a sinking ship.
I love Hans Zimmer.
Yeah.
He creates so much tension.
The second one is actually brass and strings. And it goes,
of course, brass.
But it goes on a little bit too long. Like I remember looking at my brother and I go, how long is this freaking going to take?
No.
I'm not saying too long. You get worn out.
Yeah.
You get worn out physically.
Because they did too.
Yeah.
They, the actual people who fought that war, they were worn out.
Yeah.
And they were distraught.
Yeah.
And so you are too as a watcher.
Right.
I'm just telling you.
So anyways, Dunkirk is a really good movie.
What I'm saying was, I challenged you as a joke.
I know.
And I want you to challenge me back as a joke,
and I got
Tyler.
Tired. I don't like doing it.
I don't know why you did that, because...
I don't care anymore.
Okay.
Because it's 10:16, and we're arguing about music education.
It was a joke. It was a joke, and then you said, "I don't care about
anything. I'm not going to hear this now.
I want to kill everyone." Do you hear yourself?
Wait, you're chanting.
You're
chanting. Once they get in here,
it's over, bud.
It's over, buddy.
I want to kill everyone.
Of course, it's the Burbs. What I love about the Burbs is that, yes, there's the obvious quote, "I want to kill everyone, Satan is good, Satan." That one stands out. Everyone knows that quote. What people don't know is Tom Hanks on Saturday morning, he goes, "Walter's dog just took a dump on Rumsfeld lawn." And then Ricky, the neighbor, goes, "Mrs. Rumsfeld, no tan lines.
Nice. And she goes, "That kid's a meatball. You know that, don't you?"
Oh, and then when Ray is over in the morning, he's like, "That's why I got the shotgun. I'm going to pop a few of them."
Yeah.
Big bastards, too. He's talking about the crows. And he's just eating, and he's eating, and he's eating. And
the kid.
And Carrie Fisher comes over, and she's got dog food in her hand.
And he grabs the dog food and eats it, and he goes, "Oh." And nobody ever notices that. Nobody ever notices that he eats dog food. Steven Spielberg. Yes, I know.
And then immediately afterwards, when they're in the garage, he goes, "Oh, did you see my tools?" And he goes, "Do you want to go down to the market to get one of those beef sandwiches?" And he just ate. And then he looks down at Tom Hanks for two seconds. Like, he goes, "Oh, those are beauties. Are you going to build something with those?"
He's like, "Carol's mom got me these for my Father's Day present." And he breaks them open. He's like, "Oh, those are beauties."
He's not even paying attention.
He's not even paying attention.
I feel like... And there's only like a few guys I could do this with. I just want to have like an 80s binge. You know what I mean?
I want to have one of those binges where somebody doesn't make fun of me when I say something.
Because sometimes people don't know if people are serious about certain things.
You're a piece of...